Neo. Do you know who this is?
Morpheus.
Yes. I've been looking for you, Neo. I don't know if you're ready to see what I want to show you, but unfortunately you and I have run out of time.
What is happening to me?
You are the one, Neo.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus The Matrix Retrospective Series.
Welcome back.
We missed you.
Hosted by Jacob.
You believe that you are special, but somehow the rules do not apply to you.
Stuart.
You got the gift, but it looks like you're waiting for something.
And Arnie.
Never send a human to do a machine's job.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and explicit language.
Are you sure you want to hear this?
Listener discretion is advised.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back.
Why? It'll be fun. I promise.
Today, we're discussing Matrix Revolutions, starring Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, Carrie Ann Moss, Hugo Weaving, Jada Pinkett Smith, Harry J. Lennox, and directed by the Wachowski brothers. I'm Arnie, the co-host of Now Playing, and one way or another, this war is going to end tonight!
You already know I'm not going to recommend this. You just need to know why. Stuart in L.A.
Look past the flesh. Look through the soft gelatin of these dull cow eyes and see your podcasting host, Jacob.
Well, I'm going to look through those dull cow eyes and see people who actually reached into their pocket and donated some Matrix Green to support our show and say thank you one more time as we end the Matrix Retrospective series here.
Yes, it ends tonight.
Green arrows for our fans. Thank you, guys. As I said last time, I just like revisiting movies knowing that there's going to be a community of people that are going to listen to it and have stuff to say about it. And yes, we have reached not the end of the silver level donation. There's one more film beyond this, but we are at the end of the Matrix retrospective with the very widely controversial. Is that the word to use? Or maybe it's not a controversy.
I don't think there is. I think it's universally damned.
I think it's the popular opinion for this to be bad. I would say 7 out of 10 probably are going to give this a negative review.
It's infamous. How about that? If last time people were uncertain about where their beloved franchise was heading and had gripes and concerns, I never heard a debate about the third one. I never even saw it in theaters. I was so not jacked into it at that point. Not necessarily the franchise's fault. I just had other stuff going on in my life, too. I went to less movies in 2003, 2004, but other stuff. But I didn't see this until it came out on video. And by that time, by the time I was popping that DVD into my player, I had heard the word that pretty much everyone I knew disliked this, and many of them very strongly.
And once again, I saw this opening day. I didn't have a job at the time, but I found 10 bucks to shell out and get to go see it during the day, beat those crowds and get that matinee price, which is probably good since I didn't have a whole lot of money. But I was excited for this one after seeing Reloaded.
And I'm a completionist. In for a penny, in for a pound. I was there opening night because there were some question marks at the end of Matrix Reloaded. I needed to have those questions answered. So I came back, fingers crossed, hoping that part three was going to make part two worth it. Now, again, if you've listened to the last podcast, I see that part two can stand on its own. But back in 2003, yeah, opening night, despite my wife's strenuous objections that I was going to do this to her twice in 1 year, we went back to see The Matrix.
I mean, it should be said, Reloaded made a ton of money. I don't know if it's still the number one R-rated film, but it held that place when it came out. Kind of fast forwarding, Revolutions did half of what Reloaded did. And you know, I always wonder, is that because of the film or because of how people responded to the last one when it comes to these franchises?
It is number two. It was beaten the next year by Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, they could have done anything. They could have released anything for Reloaded and it would have made bank. But yeah, I do feel like there's a cumulative effect. Was it just the response to Reloaded, or was this specific one so much worse than Reloaded? However you take it, I think it's fair to say this. The sequels did something very different than what the original did, and a lot of people didn't know what to do with that. The Wachowskis, in going all in, I have to wonder, would they have changed anything about this third chapter if they had a couple years in between? Usually that's the way it works. You make a sequel, you plan a trilogy, you still have at least 365 days to fix whatever might not have been perceived as good. We'll just write Jar Jar out of this one. I mean, would this have been different if they had more than 6 months in between Reloaded and this?
I have to think not. And I base that based upon the Wachowskis' lack of public image. These two, they had in their contract when they even agreed to do the sequels, no press. I don't think they necessarily care about reception. They had a studio giving them a whole bunch of money. They had their vision for how they were going to conclude the story of The One over the course of two films, making the studio happy to get double the money, and they can tell the story they want to tell and continue to expand technological boundaries. I can't imagine, given all the seeds that were sown in part two, that part three could have grown a different direction.
Yeah, according to all the extras, I mean, they hardly show up on the extras for any of these films. They speak very little. But what the other people were saying, you never know if this is just publicity or hype or whatever, but they said the Wachowskis got to do what they wanted to do. That, you know, I really thought at times, oh, is this, does this or that happen because of studio interference? But from everything that was said, no, they got free rein here. They got to tell the story that they wanted to tell. And furthermore, people said that they had all this pretty much summed up when they did that first film. They knew where they wanted to go with these sequels. It should be said these sequels were shot together. I mean, they spent 270 days filming, almost a whole year of just filming both of these films at the same time.
I think you might be right, Arnie. They are artists, first and foremost. They're not going to let other people's opinions of their work necessarily shape or change the direction that they have conceived. But still, come on. I mean, I do feel like clarity comes in a certain amount of time, and that it must be very hard to conceive Matrix world, and they pretty much built an entire community in 4 years without some involvement, you know, without people commenting and shaping. I just feel like it's a real shame they didn't have another year to release this. This didn't come out in summer 2004 rather than in fall 2003. I wonder if we wouldn't have had a better movie than what we're going to talk about today.
Well, you always talk about art through adversity, and look at what happened with Lucas and the prequels. Is it good to sometimes have the studio suits walk in and to make a few demands to edit the crazy artist? I guess that's what we will be discussing with this third film.
I'll put it in the language that they like to. Sometimes control is what we need. Sometimes it's what we seek. Having all of this freedom, it might have given them enough rope to hang themselves with. Arnie, why don't you give them the plot? We'll get into it.
When last we left our hero, Neo, he was in a coma after exerting his supernatural powers over Sentinels, and thousands of machines were on their way to destroy Zion. Well, in the coma, Neo's brainwaves read like he's in the Matrix. But how can that be? He's not jacked in. Well, it turns out he's in a program that appears like a subway station that is used by the Merovingian to smuggle rogue programs into the Matrix so they can hide. There, Neo meets three programs, two created naturally, but they created a love child machine named Sadi. Here, Neo learns programs can feel, dream, and love. They're not so different after all. But in the train station, Neo has none of his powers as the One, so he's trapped there by the homeless-looking train man. It's up to Morpheus and Trinity to rescue him, so they go into the Matrix, put a gun to the Frenchman's head, and get Neo free. But Neo now has a new mission. He's been told by the Oracle that Agent Smith is going to destroy both the Matrix and the real world, and Smith is even powerful enough to take over the Oracle. To try and stop this, Neo wants to go to the main machine city. Niobe gives Neo her ship, and Neo and Trinity go there while the rest of the crew return to Zion to aid in the fight against the thousands of Sentinels that are attacking. So for, what, about 30, 45 minutes, we have a fight.
Big one, yeah.
Machines attack Zion, and the humans put up a good fight, but they're losing. And Niobe, Road to Hell is paved with good intentions when she comes in and activates her EMP. She does shut down all the attacking machines, but also takes out all of the human armory as well. But really, that's all irrelevant. But the real plot is Neo and Trinity going to the city. And on the ship, Bane, remember Bane? He was possessed by the mentality of Agent Smith, has stowed away. And Trinity and Neo kill him, but not before he burns Neo's eyes with a cable, blinding the man. And their ship is attacked along the way to the city, and Trinity has to crash land the ship, dying from injuries inflicted in the landing. Finally, Neo goes to the leader machine, who I found in bonus materials is named Deus Ex Machina.
Good name.
And he offers a truce. Agent Smith is taking over the Matrix and will soon infect all of the machines. And Neo will go into the Matrix and destroy Agent Smith. But in exchange, the machines need to declare a peace with the humans. Deus Ex Machina agrees, and so Neo goes in and fights Smith to a stalemate. Finally, Neo realizes what must be done. He lets Smith take him over, which does kill Neo. But it also kills Smith, returning the Matrix to its previous Smithless state. And with this done, the machines keep their word and have a peace with the humans. Any humans in the Matrix who wish to go to the real world are allowed to do so. But despite Neo's physical death, the Oracle tells young Sadie that they may not have seen the last of Neo as credits roll.
Oh, but they have.
Oh, but they haven't. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
So when this movie started, man, did I get a bad flashback. I had completely forgotten this whole train station sequence. That Neo is in this middle world between the real world and the Matrix, which is used to shuttle rogue programs from the real world into the Matrix, and somehow when he shut down the Sentinels, Neo teleported his mentality there.
Arnie, I'm surprised you were dreading this. Didn't you like when Han was frozen in carbonite and had to be rescued from Jabba's palace?
I'm glad I'm not the only one that saw that. I figured the Star Wars people would definitely pick up if I was picking that up. I knew you guys weren't going to miss it.
Yeah, but I didn't spend a half an hour there inside Han's mindset while he was frozen in carbonite.
I thought I was the one frozen in carbonite in this movie. I was praising Reloaded for being a great action movie. It's a good hour before I get anything I'll call a good scene, much less a good action scene.
Yeah, I think that the biggest problem here is that this is not its own film. This and Reloaded, they're one film, just split up into two. This is just going to pick right up where that last one was. No time has passed. Here's the next episode. I mean, when we complain about episodic filmmaking, you know, that television mentality taking over film, this reeks of it right here.
Yeah, and in fact, I would have preferred that Matrix Reloaded was 40 minutes longer and they just stapled the cool doc shootout to that film. I really think you can skip everything here. This whole nonsense about being trapped in limbo with the homeless train guy, cut it. And by God, whatever you do, don't show this scene of going to the bondage club. The absolute worst thing I think the Wachowskis will ever shoot.
That seems so Wachowski to me, though. It's got to be a bondage club. I mean, we saw that in the first film. We saw the rave in Zion, and now we're to Club Hell. If it's not obvious enough, we have Persephone, who, daughter of Zeus, the yes. ruler of hell, the underworld. Now we have to go to that underworld to save Neo. On one hand, I want to say, great, mythology. I like the computer AI mythology that was developing in that last one. Well, now they're just retelling Greek mythology, but with computers. It's not as smart.
Hey, I was getting some chuckles out of this S&M club. There were a lot of tits and a lot of gimps, and I don't know which there were more of.
I do love the aesthetic here. And you know what? I complain no vampires. We didn't see any fangs in that last one. At least we get to see some dudes, like, walking on ceilings. They're vampire-like.
And Jacob, after seeing Persephone in this little gear, I want to go back and see that makeout scene now, please.
Sexy, salacious crumb.
Come on, this is terrible, guys. This is a parody. This is what I would expect Saturday Night Live to come up with if Lawrence Fishburne was going to be their guest for the week. When they're coming in there and Seraph and them are doing that whole spinning around with their guns while the people are on the ceiling and, oh my God. And it's also that they can get to the table where the Merovingian is and Trinity can just say, we all die or you give me Neo. Like, that's it. That's how they get it.
Why didn't they do that last time? We all die here, you give me the keymaker. I mean, really, it makes that last movie seem like such a waste.
Yeah, this is the biggest problem. You know, we have Bruce Spence. This is a man that, okay, he shows up in the last film of the Mad Max trilogy, last film of the Star Wars prequel trilogy. He shows up in the last film of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. His scene was cut there. Sounds like you guys wanted a scene to be cut here, but it's funny. Bruce Spence, the train man here, like, okay, here's a villain. We're going to have some fight. Nope. We're just going to tell the Merovingian we're going to shoot him if you don't give us Neo. Like, Merovingian, hey, give me the eyes of the Oracle. Like, you're setting something up, and then a second later, totally anticlimactic. Nope, just give us him. We got a gun to your head.
I really wish that had paid off more. I wasn't even sure if he meant physical eyes or something like Clash of the Titans, and there would be some other object that gave the Oracle her power, but, and it just be called the Eye. But yeah, the fact that they could end it so quickly, really, it makes the last movie look worse.
Yes, it definitely does. I agree. Whatever you do, don't put this scene in the movie. I don't care what you do. This is a horrible, horrible scene. It's also supposed to be Seraph's scene. I'm predicting that somewhere in that video game stuff, we'll understand why he's being referred to as Judas and a traitor and his previous history with the Frenchman. I don't know what it is, but they imply that there's something cool going on between these two that is non-existent in the action.
And you know, I don't need an explanation for every line like that. I like those lines. I like that it makes this universe seem bigger, that there's some backstory there. I don't know if I need it explored. I get it. I guess I got to play a video game, but I do like those little lines that build this mythology. I said Reloaded got me to buy into this mythology. I like these little lines they drop, but it's just such an anticlimactic scene. It's cool shootout, but it doesn't go anywhere. I love that there's a Mexican standoff that's like an entire club, but then not one bullet's fired.
I am going to just go against you, Stuart, though. The shootout on the way in with the people on the roofs, it reminded me a lot of that scene I liked after a while from the first Matrix film with that shootout.
The one I didn't, yes.
Yeah, so I kind of enjoyed that. It's the lack of payoff at the end of all of it. It's the quick way they get the upper hand on the Merovingian. It's the fact that they're able to be so superior so quickly when last time he did seem like a character who had the upper hand, and it wasn't until his wife betrayed him that he could be bested. On the one hand, I'm glad they didn't replay all that shit again, and we didn't have an extra half hour of trying to outsmart the Merovingian again. On the other hand, it makes him look like an idiot.
I think you've nailed it. Is this time they're exposed. They have exposed themselves. This is very bad writing. The way you write somebody out of a problem, you know, how are we going to get him back? How are we going to get him back? How are we going to get him back? I'll point a gun at him. Okay. I mean, that is piss poor.
Here's the thing. This whole trilogy is about just pointing the gun at something and getting it back. That was what was so cool about the Saving Morpheus and, you know, a lot of the action scenes in that last film.
But that was a really big gun.
Here, we don't even get to see the gun fire. It's literally, we're just going to pull out a gun and that's going to end the scene. That's going to solve the problem.
Yeah. Dreadful, dreadful, dreadful. And their reunion, you know, feels like we're 20, almost 30 minutes into this movie before she's pulling up on the train.
25. I marked it down.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. I feel like nothing in this first act is any good at all. You might as well just have him wake up out of the coma and say, I don't know what happened. I got a headache, and go on with the plot. Do not show us any of this garbage. I mean, I guess it sets up little Sati as if that matters. But yeah, that's the only character that comes out of this that makes any difference, is that we have Sati, who will be hanging out with the Oracle later.
But Stuart, it's hitting you over the head again. Machines. They're just like us. They have emotions. We don't want to decimate them. I went into this movie in 2003 expecting it to end with the Death Star blowing up and the humans victorious over the evil machines. I didn't see that the Wachowskis were spending two movies telling me the machines aren't evil.
Yeah, I like this idea that programs are making programs, and, you know, Sati doesn't have a purpose. She's a love child, and what does that mean when a program is supposed to have a purpose? I could have got this information without going to Mobile Ave train station, or Limbo if you do the anagram.
I did like that there was an ad in the background for Tasty Wheat, which was brought yes. up in the very first one as what their gruel tastes like.
Cute, but yes, nothing of consequence really happens here. I don't even really feel like they're playing off of like a Dante Divine Comedy purgatory heaven and hell. I mean, this is not purgatory. This is just, yeah, a train depot that we've wasted half an hour in. I mean, come on, guys.
I really think that they're trying to sell you on this emotional relationship and connecting with the programs. I think that's the real point. Everything else is irrelevant, but to the Wachowskis, I'm not saying it's good, but I'm saying they felt like like we really needed to have driven home that we don't want to see the computers killed any more than we want to see the humans killed.
Here's the thing. They convinced me. I like the programs. I've been on record of that. I like the Merovingian. I like the Oracle. Sati, cute kid. It's the humans I don't like. The actual humans who I think if this was a traditional action film, that's who we were rooting for. You know, when Trinity walks off that train and the music swells, I'm like, okay. She saved him by doing nothing. I don't care. Let's get back to the programs. And we're going to leave the Matrix for so much of this film. I think that's what disappoints me. I actually enjoy being plugged in after Reloaded.
I think you're right. I think, Jacob, you're really right. As I didn't realize how much I needed the action to be in that Matrix-y, I have powers that other people don't, so I can jump around and fly stuff. Yeah, when we're back in Zion, or what's largely just in ships in drab corridors, it's really not a pleasant, exciting experience. It's not a world that I'm caught up in. I do feel like this series was always stronger when, yeah, you're defying gravity and jumping around buildings or cars to cars. There's no fun here by being out of the Matrix so much. Plug me back in. Please.
Wow, I'm actually going to stand against you two on that one, because I found myself during this first half hour fight at the S&M club, I enjoyed it, but I was starting to feel fatigued, because now that Neo has brought Trinity back to life, it feels like VR. It feels like fighting in the Matrix has no consequence. And later in this movie, it really hit home, because there's a fight in the real world of Trinity versus Bane. We'll talk about it in a while. But that made me realize I enjoy the real world fights so much more because they can't fly. These fights have consequences and grit that maybe it's because we watched 3 in 3 weeks, but I was starting to get tired of the slick techno ninja Matrix fights. I, in this movie, prefer the real world stuff to anything that happens jacked in. And I wondered if the Wachowskis were feeling the same way, because yeah, for a movie called The Matrix, we're barely there this movie.
Yeah, I wonder if they are tired of their own shit. That's what it does feel like. We don't want to do anything that we used to do anymore. God forbid that we entertain you with some action. We're going to just be drab and totally deny what you're expecting. Yet again, this one, I thought I knew what I'd get after watching Reloaded, and this is doing none of that. I didn't even know that this would be a thing, that like we'd take half an hour to wake him up out of the coma. And I sure as hell didn't know that once he did get out of the coma and went to see the Oracle, we'd have all of this bizarre crap about how it's not the woman that played her before. The actress died, right? I mean, I think yes. I remember this.
Yes. We can't blame the Wachowskis for this.
We can. We absolutely can, because the Oracle is a character that is going to be, as soon as the scene is over, perverted and changed by Smith. Start there. Just have the first scene being heard with her back to us in the kitchen. Smith walks in and sticks her, and we don't have to deal with the fact that they don't have the actress to play the role anymore.
But they have to have all of that dialogue again.
They don't. They don't.
The question at the end of the last movie is the Oracle good or bad? Here, the Oracle has to say she risked all for good. She is going rogue too. She is a rogue program that is on the side of the humans. She is like Willy from V.
Okay.
I love how she tells Morpheus, because Morpheus, what a tragic character. He was the one with the blind faith and the one that turns out to be bullshit. And I love the line that she gives him, you know, you need to make up your own damn mind. Like, he was living so blindly by what the Oracle was saying. She finally tells him how it is. But then there's also that line, you know, everything that has a beginning has an end. I think that's a key line that's going to play a big part at the end of this film. You have to have the Oracle say that to understand, I think, what's going on when Smith says it later.
I don't know. It just feels like, and it sounds like you're enjoying the fact that we saw all these characters we thought were cool the first time, and now we're learning that they're buffoons and losers and people that don't have any control over what they're doing. To me, that's not satisfying.
I like this because it's not a traditional action film. It's, you know, Sylvester Stallone, Arnold, he can't lift the 1,000-pound truck to save the day. I like this idea that you're taking expectations and turning them on their head and trying to tell a different kind of story, you know, still in this huge sci-fi action universe, but you're trying to change the way I think especially Western audiences see these kind of stories. I like what they're attempting. When we get to the end of this, I'll talk about if they succeeded with that attempt, but I like what they're attempting as this movie is unfolding, as this trilogy is unfolding.
And I'm going to split the difference here and say that, Jacob, I agree with you that what they're saying is interesting to me. We have to have this Oracle scene because she explains why Neo stopped the Sentinels, that his erroneous code goes all the way back to the source in the real world. We need this information. But Stuart, I agree, it's being told to us in the least interesting way possible. It's like a textbook versus an action film.
I will say this new Oracle, this new actress, she's just not as warm. Now, maybe she's supposed to be playing it more grave because the Merovingian destroyed her old shell and she had to reform. But she's just not as warm. You know, we'll see her baking some cookies later on. But it's just not the same as that original actress.
And is it worth perusing whether there's any meaning to her having a different form other than the fact that they obviously couldn't get the actress back from the dead to shoot these scenes? I mean, they wouldn't have done it this way if she were alive. We were confident they would have just not messed with this whole, oh, you've changed crap.
Yes, but they also talked about not doing that in this movie. They were going to just ignore the fact that it was a different actress, but then thought that would be disrespectful too. Personally, I think this was around the time The Sopranos did this. They should have just CGI'd the other woman's face over here and found a sound-alike actress.
What, scanned it from her funeral?
They have footage. Believe me, these people shot a lot of footage. They could probably even take from deleted scenes. They could have found whatever was important to them to convey to Neo, and then she's changed. After this point, Smith walks in, he gets Sati, he gets Seraph. I think he's gotten every human being in the Matrix. At this point, I'm wondering if there is a person alive on Earth, or at least on the Matrix Earth, who isn't Smith.
By the end, no. I believe he has become everybody.
Right.
But that's at the end of the movie. Here, he's still doing it. I mean, he's going door to door with it. He's not robocalling yet.
I would feel like the Oracle would be one of the last gets, you know, like she would be one of the holdouts here. But once he has her, what does it even matter? I guess that's my attitude to how much power I had given her. I really thought that she was important to the story. With her being tainted and perverted, with her not being a resource for Neo, he would be lost at this point, I would think.
And I like the fact that it makes Smith seem even more powerful, because we don't know exactly what happens, but once he takes over the Oracle, he starts laughing maniacally. We believe he has the foresight that she had. She wasn't full of shit. She really knew stuff.
Yeah, but that evil laugh is horrible.
You know, Stuart, I don't see this film the way you do. I think with this Oracle stuff, you're acting like they spent hours explaining why she has a different body. It's a line. You know, I like that when Smith takes her over, you do see something go crazy with the code. They go into Matrix Vision, and the Smiths act differently when they're kind of scared when they take her over. All these little things, I don't know, they're just little pieces of storytelling that work for me, that make this more interesting than if just Smith showed up and he was the Oracle all of a sudden.
And I'll say that there's 10 minutes of Smith and the Oracle and Neo and the Oracle, and that 10 minutes almost helps redeem the 25 of the train station.
I gotta ask, they're not the only ones that met the Oracle. When they finally get back out of the Matrix and jack back to the hammer, the ship.
Actually called Mjolnir.
Yeah, they never say it in the movie, though. They always call it the hammer, but all the crew, the production crew, called it Mjolnir.
Oh, how very Thor. And before Thor was back on the screen, it should be pointed out. But Jada Pinkett Smith comes walking up and being like, I'm not dead, and I saw the Oracle, too. Was this a video game thing?
That is from the video game. She does go see the Oracle, and it's a whole cutscene. That, yeah.
I'm like, because no, you did. I was getting mad at the movie. I was like, no, you didn't, damn it. I'm taking notes, and you were not in those scenes. But this is a video game thing. Okay.
Gotta play the game.
I believe Jada Pinkett Smith's entire appeal in this movie is a cutscene. All right.
It's what Jacob said about universe building. Either you go with it or you don't. I'm resistant, but...
Yeah, no, there's little lines like, Smith calls the Oracle mom. She's like, you bastard. And he's like, you would know, mom. Like, what does that mean? Did the Oracle create Smith? Are we going to get an answer here? No. Do I need an answer to that? Do I need to explore that? No, I like these little lines because I think it's fun to discuss these afterwards with like-minded people. I don't know if that is pivotal to know what does that line mean. I don't need to know that to understand the Matrix.
I thought that line was very clear. I mean, the architect created the Matrix and it didn't work. He's dad. And in order to make it work, they said in the last movie, they needed something to understand human intuition. And so she's mom. And so the two of them combined are the parents of everything in the Matrix. So when he said mom, I just took it as you helped create the Matrix.
And Jacob, to your point, I do think it's great that we can have little details that will be discussed to the end of time where no one is quite sure what it all means. That the creation is bigger. The Wachowskis, even if they did commentary, wouldn't be able to tell you. They built something that has a life of its own. All of that is very cool and in keeping with the themes of this movie, but this movie is all of that. I feel like, yes, You can have a gelatinous fatty tissue in your creature, but it needs to have a spine. It needs to have a skeletal hard structure and shape to it. And I feel like both sequels, I don't know where we're supposed to go. I don't know why Neo all of a sudden is going, I have visions and I'm going to follow this pipe all the way to Machine City.
You know, this is still what's unclear to me. They throw out some goobly glob about how he touched the source and so now he could affect machines outside of the Matrix and he could have visions of these power lines that he's never seen that go to Machine City. Like, I don't need a whole, like, sit down 20 minute exposition scene here, but, you know, okay, they got these ports in them for when they were jacked in. Is there some kind of programming thing that, you know, is there Wi-Fi going on and the source is speaking to him and he's able to, like, when he holds out his machine, that's just telling the program in the Sentinel to shut down. Like, I would like some little hints. To me, there's too much magic in this film. And I don't like that. I didn't like that in the first film where with the magic kiss. You're telling the story about machines and computers and programs. And I like that there's mythology in there, but I do want to see it grounded. And I don't like that so much of this last film is, it's just magic.
And even more curious to me is, all right, they have two ships. There's the Hammer and there's the Logos. And once the Logos is charged back up, it's going to be as good as the Hammer. And he takes the Logos, even though the Hammer is the one with the EMP. He could go to Machine City and kill every machine. He could just stop all of this nonsense and know he's going to go have a conversation or just kind of figure out what's going on. He's not sure.
Because he's going for peace, not genocide. And you got to think, he could take out Deus Ex Machina, but the Sentinels, you know, it's AI. It's not the Death Star where if you shoot a proton torpedo down the thermal exhaust port, it's going to take out every other ship around it.
Why don't they just use EMPs everywhere? The rule for the first one was, if you're jacked into the Matrix, you'll die, you'll get stuck there if you use the EMP. I got that. That was a good source of tension. But now that you've introduced this magical device that can kill all machines within a radius, why not just go around punching that button?
Well, we've seen the machines. It happened in the last one. They're onto these EMPs. Now they hang back and they toss bombs towards your ships. They've learned. They stay right out of range. And then once you hit that, you're useless. And then they could come in and attack.
Okay, that wasn't clear to me. I feel like they could have spent a little more time on that. And I still feel like that's not a reason not to use them and have them. But
I think the key to understanding Neo's motivation, why isn't he going to EMP Machine City, is Sati. He saw that these machines are becoming human. That, again, that love connection between the parents and the child, so much more convincing than any of the actual real humans that we've seen here. But I think that's what he has seen, is that machines are like humans, that they love, that they have these familial relationships. And so why would you want to destroy that?
See, God help me. I think the counterpoint to that is Link and Z. I think that is the human relationship that's supposed to mirror the computer relationship.
Supposed to.
Keyword there. Supposed.
It might have worked better with Z and Tank. Who knows? But
I don't think so.
That's what I'm saying. All the human stuff is, I don't know if it's the Wachowskis. I've seen Speed Racer, and for all the things that I enjoy about that film, it's not because there's great acting in it and human emotion flowing through it. Maybe it's just something with them.
They make metaphor. I mean, the Wachowskis are good at, like, visuals and making parallels and making abstract ideas have a physicality. But I don't feel like you'd hire them to tell a love story. I don't think that they would work if they didn't have science in their fiction. Another one I'm confused about is the kid. You know, they strung him along. We saw him a little bit in Animatrix. We saw that he was hanging all over Neo for the moment that he was back at Zion. And so I'm thinking that that's going to be a child-parent relationship that's going to matter. The kid, I don't think he has another scene with Keanu Reeves. None of his love for Neo and respect for Neo and belief in Neo has nothing to do with his character arc, which is essentially with some character named Mifune for the rest of the movie. It's just, nothing is adding up the way that I thought it would. I guess that's what I'm saying.
But does that make it bad?
Not if I'm happily surprised. Not if what they've come up with is better than anything we could have thought of.
It's just that all these human reactions are falling flat for me. I mean, Neo's going to leave for a good 30, 45 minutes, and this film's going to rely on Z, Chara, Mifune, the kid.
Who?
Chara, that's the girl, the, you know, the with the shaved head. Yes.
No, I know, but I mean, who?
Yeah. Is she the lesbian with the short hair?
Yes.
She has short hair, yes.
Yeah, I believe she was also in World War Z. Yeah, hanging with Brad Pitt for a while. Yes.
Yeah, all these characters where I'm supposed to care about them. And I just don't. The writing fails to invest me in this giant battle we're going to get to. I don't feel like I'm invested the way I should be because we know Neo is going to go out there and do something to save the day. But nope, let's spend half the film on this giant battle now.
I completely agree, Jacob, because now all of a sudden they have these mechs. They were kind of teased in the last one. And I remember thinking, oh boy, they have giant mech suits.
They were in the Animatrix.
Oh yeah, there too. So we get this massive battle, and it looks great, and I just wish there was a single character I cared about in this battle. Why isn't Morpheus here? Why isn't Trinity here? I mean, there could be people we care about in danger, but I said last time that we care about these people about as much as I cared about Apoc, and that stands true too. I'm getting this great speech. It's kind of reminding me of what happened at the end of Pacific Rim, only without the wonderful emotion Idris Elba could bring to it, but it's that type of speech, and it's a glorious, multifaceted battle. But I was taken back to a video game I used to play called Command and Conquer, where it's a, like, very fast action war game. I cared about as much as that. Oh, they're breaching this flank! Okay, set up some more gunners over there. But I don't care about a single person in the mech suit. I don't care about the kid and his big story arc that I have to reload that mech suit and go out there and face my fear even though I'm only 16 and I need to be 18. Fuck it all.
His whole story could have remained in the Animatrix. It could have just been all in that cartoon. It wouldn't have even mattered. Yes, they never integrated him in the storyline with the characters that we cared about. And that's true of most of Zion. Zion's a real drag, I gotta say. But you are not gonna get me to speak ill of this battle scene with the mechs versus the squids. I have always loved the Sentinels, and I love the idea that the humans are gonna strap on machines and battle them in this video game way. I think that this is the only stuff that I like in Revolutions.
See, and I just feel like when I was watching my friend play Command and Conquer, and I just wanted the mouse.
So what? Yeah, it's cool. You wanted the mouse because it looked cool to play.
There are moments that I really like. Overall, I think this goes on too long. The actual battle, I believe, is about 30 minutes. I kind of timed it. Just of straight fighting, and there are moments that I like. I love the animation of the Sentinels. The way, you know, when they're walking along those walls and their tentacles are being used as legs, and when they swarm around. Like, you ever watched The School of Fish and how they move in one motion, they overtake that big tower in the middle of the dock, and, you know, there are those great moments like that. Just, they look fantastic. And then there's times where this just looks cheap when you have Z and Chara running around with their bazooka. Like, these sets, they don't look like metal. They look like, you know, the styrofoam that they shape and paint, and so much of it just, it doesn't feel like a battle when you see two people running around with millions of squiddies. There's great moments, and then, but most of it's just dull for me.
Yeah, I agree. I don't care about any of the characters. I don't care about any of the close calls that come.
Yeah, dig this. Ugh.
And here's the worst part, is this is actually coming after the fight on the Logos, where it turns out Bane, I mentioned in the plot summary, has stowed away. Bane beats the shit out of Neo, blinds him, has a scalpel to Trinity's neck. This is the fight that made me realize I care about this much more than the Matrix fights. These are visceral. These are bloody. These are involving characters I care about. Holy shit, they took Neo's eyes. And then we get this CGI fest, and I'm honestly completely detached.
Yeah, I do love the Bane stuff. I love the way he does Smith. Like, he studied that first film, the actor, to get that enunciation down and that pattern down. And, like, at first, people didn't know he was supposed to be acting like Smith, and they were cracking up when he would do his lines because he got it down so well. They're like, why are you impersonating Weaving?
I had to look it up to see if it was Weaving, and they put a goatee on him. I mean, he was that good.
Yeah, and I do like how brutal that fight is, like the way his nose is split open. And just, again, when we're in Zion, when we're emphasized the body, that's what Zion and that blue look that Zion and the different ships have is all about, is the body. So to see how gritty that fight is, that's fun. And when they blind him, but yeah, here's what it is. The editing this film sucks. There is no editing. It's like, here's 30 minutes of fighting, and then we're going to cut to Neo and Trinity flying around, and then we're going to cut into the Matrix. One of the scenes, we didn't talk about it in Reloaded, was when they're getting ready to storm the building so Neo could get to the source. And we got Morpheus giving his speech and stuff going on the hammer and the different ships and, you know, the building being invaded, and they're all intercut, and it was very exciting. And the Wachowskis, that's what they did with Speed Racer at the beginning. That's why I wanted to see Speed Racer. They released like the first 5 minutes, and you get Speed when he's in school and like drawing pictures of cars and cutting to when he's older and racing, and it's very exciting the way they play with time and intercut everything. I would have liked that here. I think it would have built some tension. tension. Instead, we just get, okay, set piece one, set piece two, set piece three. It loses any tension for me because I'm just waiting to see this one end and where does the next story go.
The fact is, you take Neo out of this film for a half an hour and Neo is the one we care about.
But every time he's on screen, I disagree with you guys. I think his scenes are terrible. I think that blinding scene is camp hilarious. Again, how disappointing for Trinity. We've seen her ninja kick five people and flip off a bike and do whatever, and then one dude can like tie her up and throw her in a hole. Like, come on, how pathetic.
But this is in the real world. They don't have...
I know, but come on, really? She's learned nothing from the Matrix? She really can be taken that easily? And I'm sorry, the blinding thing, I had forgotten all about this. This stuff is bad. I mean, I wanted to stand up and shout like that guy did in the first Matrix. That was bad! As in, not good. I think this is terrible, terrible, terrible. But I'm telling you, every scene up until that Doc fight scene, I think is a bad scene. Not just a unsatisfying scene, bad. Bad dialogue, bad action, bad acting, bad. This first hour of Revolutions is something I never want to see again. It's too bad that this keeps coming back. I hope it comes back in a more convincing form next time.
Wow, you took the blue pill and I took the red pill on this one because I liked all the stuff on that Logos and didn't care for the CGI fest, and you took the reverse. It's like I'm talking to Smith and I'm Neo in this case. I mean, I can't believe...
Oh, you're the good one, huh?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I it's so weird having Stewart defend the action scenes.
Look, it's not like I don't understand what you guys are saying. You're saying you're disconnected from the action. You're not caught up because you don't like the characters. You're not caught up. It's just video game. Well, I feel that way about a lot of action movies, and I guess because that's why I'm not really into action movies overall. But I will compliment a movie that does video game well, and I do feel like this Doc is a really solid action scene amid a sea of terrible, dramatic, and poorly thought out action. I'm sorry, I can't believe you're going with that logo stuff. And the way that it ends, I mean, maybe the only nice touch about their journey to Machine City. And every time they say Machine City, I think about Paradise City. I start singing Guns N' Roses in my head. But when they make it to Machine City, they have to avoid all these squids that are being fired on them. And they veer up and go over the clouds. And I'm reminded about the fact that there is sun and like blue skies just beyond reach there. It makes you wonder why the machines didn't build a tower. Maybe build a little bit higher.
The Tower of Babel?
Yeah, something.
They're just not into aesthetics. They're machines.
Yeah, but we do see when they try to go up there, however they blacked out the sky, I read on Wikipedia it's like nanomites that did it. So there's something that shorts them out when they try to go up through it.
Yeah, I thought they just stalled out from going too high or something.
That was a nice touch, but everything else in this journey, and particularly the way it ends, no, I don't like it.
I don't even think it was a very nice touch. I mean, it's Trinity gets to see blue sky before she dies. Yay. She dies again. I mean, really, let's look at this in Matrix time. She died yesterday. Neo resurrected her. She dies today.
It was meant to be. Again, I go with a lot of the ideas here. I like the metaphor. If you know the allegory of the cave, that from Socrates, that we were living in a cave watching shadows of objects on a wall, and we go out and we're blinded by the sun. We see Neo as he exits the cave, as he comes out of Zion. He is literally blinded. And, you know, we get to see that shot of the sun. I think that's a poetic moment that we need in this film. If you're satisfied with that happens afterwards to Trinity, oof, that's another thing. But I do like that moment. You know, we get to see all these cool war machines shooting out different projectiles and sentinels, and then to have that moment in the sun. I do like that.
So Trinity dies to make Neo a better person. I'm like, I thought the Wachowskis were better than this. This is honestly the very worst scene in the whole trilogy. It's worse than hell. It's worse than that club scene in hell is what they have done to Trinity here. And the way that she just dies by happenstance. She crashes and, oh, I'm going to die. Oh, I could help you. No, no, I'm going to die. Yes, I can. I mean, woo, open a window because the farts just keep stinking out the place.
I do get what you're saying, Stuart. On the other hand, we have the hammer, and Niobe and Morpheus are flying it, and the other crew, they're shooting the sentinels. This scene does turn me around on Niobe. She does come off as a badass. I love when she's like, shit, she's got a fat ass, when she's trying to race this ship back to the dock, and, you know, they finally hit the EMP and destroy all the machines. But they blow through a door like nothing happens. Like nothing happens with that ship. They're able to hit the EMP. They're able to fire away. No one dies. I do like the fact that if the ship crashes like this, this is probably what's going to happen. I don't know what the purpose of Trinity's death is, though. I don't know what we're supposed to learn from it.
Mm-mm,
and that's the problem for me.
Yeah, I don't understand what we're supposed to get out of that at all. They're killing her to close up loose ends.
Yes.
They're killing her so that we can, if we're romantics about it, think of them like Romeo and Juliet, and they both died and they're together in whatever Matrix afterlife exists because they saved humanity together and their love saved us all. But really, it's kind of like in Return of the Jedi when you go and Yoda's conveniently dying just because he's run out of use as a character. That's Trinity's death here, which makes me say that they should have let her die last time. And then Neo would have nothing to lose. We could have a new spin on Neo. We've seen Neo as not sure if he's the one. Then we've seen Neo as in love and coming to his point. Here, we just have a continuation of the last one. Jacob, you started off by saying this is the same movie continued. It is, and Neo's hitting the same character beats. I would have liked to have seen anguished Neo, torn up Neo. Let's kill the machines, and then I have to come around to making peace with them, Neo. Versus, I'm going to watch my girlfriend die again, only this time I can't stick my hand in her.
Because
he could, but not in her heart to bump that.
Well, yeah, I mean, post-fatal fisting, okay, but
I really thought that they were above cliches like this. Hey, why not twist it? Why not kill Neo and have Trinity finish this movie?
They were never above cliches like this. They started the whole thing as a Jesus story.
Yeah.
But come on, you understand what I'm saying. They have, and Jacob has been largely praising these sequels as doing the unexpected and challenging those kinds of conventions. I say let Trinity finish out this movie and kill Keanu Reeves. You want to do something that I wouldn't have expected? That would have at least been less condescending to what they did with Trinity. I just feel like, wow, I don't know what else to say.
That would have undermined their franchise. I really think that's a bad choice. I mean, you have set Keanu up as the one, you know, again, I hate to keep making Star Wars parallels, but it's inevitable. You don't end Return of the Jedi with R2-D2 and C-3PO killing Vader and throwing him down the shaft.
And they could have had it been Leia. They did set up Leia as having the Force in that one.
They did also set up Trinity to be a powerful female icon, and she's dying like every other stupid character after they've served their purpose. I feel like, yeah, they just don't know what to do with all these characters, and so she dies so that Neo can be better. If he is better. It gets him out of the ship. It gets him climbing up a tower to talk to a big baby face made out of squids. How much worse can this get, honestly? Deus Ex Machina? The Hand of God? I mean, this is something they tell you not to do in screenwriting. Do not have something come in. It's almost comical.
But given that they're in a machine world, the God machine actually makes sense here.
I totally agree with you. It's a weird choice to go. I will put it that way. If most films did this kind of thing, yes, I'd be complaining. Here, in a machine world, you have a machine god.
They had the architect. He was the machine spokesman. You don't need Babyface.
I think the important distinction here, again, is we have the human world, we have the machine world, and the Matrix is really becoming its own world. It is no longer a tool the machines use to subdue humans and create energy. Yes, it is that, but it is evolving to something more. Just like recreated robots, the robots have now created this new AI interface. So I don't think you could have the architect play that role of God, maybe the God of the Matrix, but we have to have that representative from the machine world. There are three distinct worlds. I don't see the Matrix as being part of Machine City.
Yeah, I don't either. I see this as the head machine. And yeah, you know, if you fired off an EMP there, it may seriously destabilize the machines. But again, that's not what Neo wants. Neo doesn't want to destroy the machines. Neo wants peace.
Yeah, I love that he sees the Machine City as light. It's heavenly. You know, we see it through Trinity's eyes, and it's like crustaceans and insectoid, but for Neo, it is light. It is heaven. It is gold.
And the real villain here, we've thought from the first movie, or I thought at least from the first movie, that the villains were the machines, right? But no, the only true baddie in this trilogy is Smith.
Though I do wonder, yes, he comes off as the traditional bad guy, but it almost seems like he is playing a role. This is how we are going to get to this new, I guess, seventh Matrix at the end of this film. That the question is, did this have to happen? Was this a role that had to be played? These programs are so much about playing their role. The Keymaker does what he does because that's what he was designed to do. Is this what Smith was designed to do? My question, though, it goes back to what we were talking about before. It says that Smith is going to destroy the Matrix and he's going to leak out, I guess, into the machine world and destroy the machines. I always thought, I wish we would have saw this more in the Matrix. What Smith was doing. Was this waking people up? When you see 600 of the same person, does that awake you from your pod and you die because you realize you're in a dream? I would have loved to see like these pod people coming alive and dying because they couldn't take the shock of seeing so many Smiths. I wish we got to see, we're told that he's destroying the Matrix. I wish we got to see it.
Be that as it may, I'm not sure that it feels like the logical end to all of this, but we certainly need to do something with Smith. So yes, the final battle is about Neo and his doppelganger inside the Matrix. They jack him in, right? They build a little chair for him and jack him, and away he goes inside.
With his arms outstretched, which I hate.
What, you haven't had enough obvious Christ metaphors? This one puts it over the top?
They spent so much time subverting that, though, and then to have him, you know, when they sat in their dentist chairs, their arms were like on armrest. But no, now he's got his arms outstretched.
He's gonna die to save us, Jacob.
Doesn't have to be so Western. I mean, they go with the reincarnation theme at the end. I just wish it wasn't so Western at this point.
I could have used a little bit more cliche, I'll be honest with you. But I guess we get it because we get a big, like, battle in the rain. Here's every martial arts film I've ever seen. Battle in the Rain, where people are doing wire foo and what have you. Is this a good fight for you guys? I know I don't give a shit.
Again, it has its moments, just like all the fights in this particular film go for me. It has its moments. There's some cool parts, but overall, you know, I do love the rain. They talked about how they had to create a new way to make rain in this film. They wanted big drops so it looked like the Matrix code falling apart and coming down out of the sky. So again, there's some cool visuals, but at this point, I'm wondering why has it now turned into a huge beat-em-up fight that hasn't worked before. What is going to be different this time?
Is that the Oracle he's fighting too? I mean, there's so many Smiths, it could have been anyone. My sense is that is the infected Oracle that he's actually battling.
Towards the end of the fight, Smith says, everything that has a beginning has an end. Neo. It's the one time Smith refers to Neo as Neo instead of Mr. Anderson. So that, to me, that is the Oracle.
But I don't know if, you know, Smith being a program, does every Smith have the same power and every Smith have the same knowledge, or is he the one true Smith? I mean, it all ceases to matter. The Oracle was consumed by Smith. But during this fight, I'm going to say I kind of liked it because I kept thinking about Superman Returns. That came out 3 years after this, and it didn't come close to this kind of a Superman fight. This Superman fight is so much better. It's the best Superman fight of the 21st century.
Yeah, and somehow these two guys didn't destroy a whole city fighting, like Zod and Superman.
But, I mean, the thing that I got was a little bit of, again, I went into this fight like it's all fakery. They are completely stalemated, and Smith starts beating Neo down, and he stands up again, and they do a little bit more. I mean, don't get me wrong, I got chills waiting for this movie when at the end of The Matrix 2, they have Hugo Weaving going, Mr. Anderson, welcome back. We missed you. I'm still loving Hugo Weaving in this trilogy. I think he is phenomenal as Agent Smith. Anytime Agent Smith is on the screen, I'm happier than any other time in this movie. The more Agent Smith you give me, the happier I am, because that's less characters I don't care about that you're giving me. So I'm happy to see him here. I'm happy for a well-choreographed, special affected fight in the rain, but yeah, it's all kind of pointless too. I mean, Neo doesn't really win or lose.
Well, I think that's the point. I think we go in starting, okay, this is going to be the big beat-em-up brawl where Neo wins. He's getting defeated. And I love that point where Smith is like, why do you fight? Is it because of love? Is it because of this and that? Freedom? Yeah, every line that Weaving spits out in this trilogy is pretty much gold for me. Then it becomes, oh, because I choose to. But even choosing isn't enough. There is this giving up. This, again, it becomes a very Eastern philosophy to me. The way to win is to give up and accept your fate in the universe. You know, in this case, it's to be turned into a Smith clone.
All right, let's drill down into this. I need to drill down, okay? I need to parse this step by step. Big Superman fight, stalemate. The Oracle starts speaking through Agent Smith, because Agent Smith goes, I've seen this. I come here and I say, everything that has a beginning has an end. Why am I saying this? Yeah.
Neo, which is the key.
And so the way I interpret this, but I think this is very poorly defined and open to a lot of interpretations. The way I interpret this is Neo goes, he took over the Oracle, and the Oracle kept some of herself in him. The way I can defeat him is by letting him take me over, knowing there will still be some of myself there that I can use to fight from the inside. That's how I read it.
See, I don't, because we see Deus Ex Machina pump a bunch of light into Neo, and he even spits light out of his mouth in the real world, which is kind of weird. But I just took it as they uploaded McAfee antivirus.
So Deus Ex Machina had to be physically jacked into a Smith in order to destroy Smith.
That's how I took it. It needed to be able to rewrite his code, to destroy his code by being directly, yeah, jacked in.
To me, this is just a busier version of the fight in Hell, where it all ends with someone pointing a gun at someone. I mean, like, you don't have answers. The Wachowskis have tried to find it, you know, that old philosophy saying, can God make a stone that's so heavy he cannot lift it up? I feel like they're trying to dramatize that in this moment. They have created a problem for themselves that they cannot write themselves out of. And so it's just a bunch of nonsense here. All of these lines that Smith is saying, I feel like it's an existential crisis. The script itself is screaming, why are you getting up? Why are we doing this? How is this going to end?
See, I don't entirely understand how Smith suddenly gets destroyed and the Matrix is returned to its own. I guess, Jacob, you're telling me that the light indicates it's Deus Ex Machina doing this?
That's how I read it, because we see it pumping light into Neo, and then we see that light burst forth from the Smith that he became.
And Stuart, do you give a shit enough to have a theory?
No, that's exactly it. Who cares? Does it even matter? If Saki came and said, I baked a cookie, and he bit it and did a spin and made everything turn into rainbows and unicorns, it would be just as good. I don't give a fuck what you have to say at this point.
To me, the biggest problem is magic. There's just too much magic here. I would have liked a more defined explanation of what's going on. I don't need the architect to sit down for 20 minutes and tell me, but I would like them to establish some basic rules, and then we could see those rules play out.
Yeah,
I agree completely. That's the problem, is it's like Outback Steakhouse. No rules, just wrong, I guess.
That bloomin' onion ain't settling well in my stomach.
When I first saw this movie in theaters, I walked out like, is Neo dead? I mean, I wasn't even sure of that. Now, this time watching it, I can tell that the score tells me he's dead, because they play a bit of a funeral dirge and they show the glowing cross in him.
Ugh.
As they lower him. And I'm like, all right, so he's Jesus dead. But Jesus came back 3 days later and the Oracle says we haven't seen the last of Neo. So I'm like, is he dead? Is he uploaded? Is he back at a train station? I wish that was clearer.
Oh, I think it's very clear. It's still the Matrix. It's still going to have people revolt. Now, this time, the architect says they're going to let people out. I really see the red pills, as they're called. They're going to be like, you know, missionaries, the Jehovah Witnesses or Mormons knocking at your door. Hey, do you want to be freed from the Matrix? Do you want to know the truth about life? And the Matrix will release them. But I think there's still that reincarnation theme. There will be a seventh Neo. There's even the idea, there's a fan idea that Saati might be the new Neo. I mean, she created the sunset at the end of this film. It's no longer this green overlaying tone to the Matrix. Now it's bright and there's a beautiful sunset with lots of colors.
Speaking of sunset, has anyone thought about scrubbing the clouds and maybe just letting the machines be able to work on solar power again? Like, couldn't we just get it back so that the real Earth is like a nice, pretty place again and nobody has to jack into anything or need battery power?
Can I also point out, though, speaking of that we do get to see a scene of the kid running out there and going, hey, the machines aren't going to kill us anymore. But all of these Zionists who we were supposedly caring about the past two films, but I never did, we don't get to see them have a big party of celebration. The war ends and we're like done with them.
Oh, you know what though, Arnie? It's like, the war is over, Neo did it, and they all cheer, and I'm thinking about the special editions of Return of the Jedi, where as soon as that Death Star blows up, the entire galaxy cheers. I'm like, there's a lot of logistics we gotta figure out. Let's get some treaties out, let's see if we could come to the surface. Like, this ain't over. There's a lot of logistics we gotta do with those machines. machines.
I can't tell you how much I wanted a dance scene again. I can't tell you how much I wanted a squid and a human being to like waltz around to Syntecto music. You know what? I would have green arrowed that shit. If they had done that, they would have had my respect for making a completely terrible ending. But they didn't.
Like the Ewoks dancing with the rebels.
I really think we needed to see a seed of what Neo died for. We needed to see more than just, hey, the war is over. Okay, what does that mean? You know, we get it in the Matrix. We get to see the architect of the Oracle, two programs having a chat with a third program running around who's a little kid. We don't get to see anything human after Neo dies. I think that's a mistake.
I don't think it's the only one here.
I mean, I do think one of the reasons a lot of audiences had a problem. Now, Stuart, I know you're going to say there's lots more. You've talked about them during the show. But I think overall, we were set up for a black versus white, robot versus machines. Last film, we talked about 9/11. You know, 2003, when we went back to war with Iraq, there is still that war mentality to say that, no, we got to have peace and we don't have to fight. And, you know, the other is like us. It's not different. For a Western audience, at least, I don't think that was satisfying to them. I think they wanted the Death Star blown up. They wanted the machines destroyed. And that's why a lot of this failed. I mean, I remember when this movie ended and we get, you know, we don't get Rage Against the Machine during the end credits here. We get this choir. They're doing a Hindu mantra. And I just remember that audience walking out. It was like a funeral march. Like everyone's heads kind of down, not talking, not a whole lot of excitement. And I do have to wonder if it's because it wasn't black versus white, that there was so much gray in this film.
I think you're right. If you go into an action movie and want to kick ass, to hear that this is ending on turn the other cheek is dissatisfying. But it honors the messiah that they built Neo up to be. I actually think it's the right choice to have a truce. If, in fact, Zion was powered by machines, if, in fact, the machines are powered by human beings, I think that it's right to have a symbiotic truce than one side beating the other. I don't want to live in a world where I don't have an iPhone anymore. You know, I feel like we can have a compromise, and I think that's the right tone. I absolutely think they nailed the right tone to end this trilogy on. They just did it in a very poor way.
And I think you've hit the nail on the head for me, Jacob. I think that in 2003, I'm in my 20s, I'm still very angry and personally wounded over 9/11. And I wanted to see the Death Star blown up and the machines subservient and decimated. And so I was unsatisfied at that time in my life with this as an ending. Coming back again, knowing full well when we start this retrospective that this is how it's going to end, it's there. It's in the film. It is the right ending for the films the Wachowskis made. I think the way that they went around doing it was poorly done, but I'm fine with peace versus obliteration of either side. But I think in the first movie, you know, to use that kind of metaphor, in 1999's movie, the machines were Al-Qaeda and the humans were America. So at that point in 2003, truces weren't what was on our mind. Retaliation and extermination is on our mind. I don't think those seeds were planted in movie one. This is where movie two took us.
Well, no, the first movie did promise us freedom from the machines. And so I expected whatever to happen to be about us. If we work with machines, if there's a truce, it's out of our own free will, out of choice that's being made. But I'm not sure how this is going to work. I don't know how someone's going to be, what, woken up, like tap, tap, tap on their pod. Hey, do you want to stay in there? Are you cool? Or we can put you in for 5 more minutes. I don't know how this is going to work out. It just seems baffling to me.
The story did go on till 2009 on a video game.
I read about this. I had to know.
This is the online game, right?
Yes, this is a massive multiplayer online game.
Which came out a year and a half after this movie completely disappointed audiences everywhere. And I remember when they were talking about that game coming out, I'm like, yeah, who the fuck cares?
Well, it sounded very ambitious. If this third film was better received, I think it would have been more successful. Like, they would, like, every month create a new story. And it got so complex, like, they had to write scripts. So if you're new to the game, you could read up on everything you missed. Because if you didn't play at a certain time, you missed like whole story points that played out. And I can't tell you what this game was about. All I know is like there's 30 different factions. You could be a red pill. You could work for the Merovingian. There were just agents that showed up that weren't connected with the Matrix, that were, I don't know what was going on. They never got to finish telling the story. There was always hints that Neo would return. It got shut down. No one was playing it, I guess, by 09, so they shut it down without finishing the story.
Oh, there's some great things in here, though, because, I mean, I read some of the plot, and Morpheus is continuing to rebel against the rest of Zion. So you can become one of Morpheus's faction. Morpheus is all pissed off because the machines won't return Neo's body. So he becomes a mad bomber. And so if you're on his faction, you're trying to blow up the machines in retaliation for them keeping Neo's corpse.
You've been boned, baby!
And then he gets killed by an assassin in apparently a mind-blowing cutscene. And then the assassin is this new mysterious entity that you have to investigate and find out he's a rogue program. I mean, it starts off pretty tied to the events of the movie with a lot of characters such as Locke and Morpheus being leaders of factions. And the game was controlled by the players. The story was written based upon the players' actions. The war would occur, and whichever faction won would determine the events of the next chapter. But I hear the game was boring as fuck, and after they killed Morpheus, and I kept reading, I'm like, I don't know who any of these characters are they're talking about. They were all made up for the game. It became 8 degrees of separation removed from even the movies, and I stopped reading summaries.
Yeah.
But as far as the movies go, the time has come to make a choice, Mr. Anderson. Are you going to choose the red pill or the green pill for the Matrix Revolutions, Jacob?
You know, I recognize that this is the weakest in the trilogy. There's a lot of execution problems, and so much of this trilogy and this film has been about ideas that I've really liked, I've really grasped onto. I remember watching this in the theater. Now, was my head down in that death march as everyone exited? No, it wasn't, but I felt like I was disappointed. There were boring moments, that 30-minute gunfight. There are little moments here and there that I enjoyed. You know, with the whole limbo and going to Club Hell and all that, I like that gunfight. That really sums up this film for me. There's lots of little moments I like and a lot that don't quite work for me. I don't like how so much of this is just magic. Just give me a reason why Neo, whatever that source has done to his brain, or if there's electronics that are shooting out Wi-Fi from the nodes in his arms, give me something more grounded. That's what I like so much about that first film, and even the second one, is that you're telling these big myths, but they were grounded in computer language and AI, and this one I felt really strayed from that. But I still like how it subverted at least Western ideas of what an action sci-fi film should be. That I like the ambiguity. I like that it didn't go for blowing up the big machine at the end. So this one, I'm going to take the green pill. I'm choking it down. I probably need a glass of water to get it all the way down. There's a lot of flaws here, but I will recommend it. I think it's worth watching, and I think all of these films are worth discussing. I want to thank the donors, because these are films I like to talk about. Even though I know not everyone shares my views of them, I am the fan. But I'm going to choke down that green pill for this one. It's a weak recommend, but a recommend nonetheless.
Stuart.
I don't want the red pill. I want the whole bottle. I want to OD on those motherfuckers. No, this is a tremendously bad film. And not only is it tremendously bad, but it's the kind of bad you never want to make. We have seen many mistakes in a franchises that I love. You know, Alien vs. Predator Requiem is a movie that is probably worse than this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. But it's also easier to ignore. What's so awful about this film is that it makes you look back and taints everything that you enjoyed in the previous ones. Again, I wonder, is it so bad that I actually Red Arrow the entire franchise? I have to think about it. But I think you can still enjoy this first film, but don't ever watch anything else. I honestly believe, after watching this, this is so bad, the answers are so inconclusive. The Wachowskis have gone so inside their head. Yes, they've thought for 4 years about myth and meaning. Write a book. You know, go teach a class. But if you're going to make a movie, you owe us some characters we care about. You owe us to follow some story structure. This is a disaster. It's a very strong not recommend. And again, it's one that takes down my recommend for last week's movie and the Animatrix. Don't watch any of that shit. Just, it's not worth it. This makes it not worth it.
And I agree with you, Stuart, that to me, The Matrix is perfection when there's one movie.
I feel like that with most franchises, though.
True enough.
Yeah, I disagree. But then again, that's why I'm, you know, driving force of now playing. Yes,
yeah, that's why we're watching Lawnmower Man 2.
I definitely think some sequels, Star Wars, Nightmare on Elm Street, Star Trek, Terminator can widen the universe. Terminator, they should have stopped at 2. Matrix, they should have stopped at 1. It really, after I came to terms with it, find it to be a perfect mix of movie-going experience and a little bit of spiritual thought that puts it out there for discussion. And I agree, by giving us this kind of a conclusion, it does taint the franchise. But that said, there are parts of this movie that I really enjoy. I enjoy the fight on the ship, where I didn't find it funny that Keanu got blinded. I didn't remember it happening. I was taken aback. I thought that fight was visceral and had energy and had stakes. I like the fight at the end with Smith. I don't like how it ends, but I like the fight itself. It's very pretty. It's very exciting. I even got into certain parts of that video game fight. Most of it was kind of boring me, but the visuals were good. And I found it cool when the two women were bazookaing the legs of the drill and making it fall. And when the hammer is flying down there, it's kind of pointless overall, but there was some excitement there. I didn't hate every minute of this movie. I didn't. I enjoyed watching certain parts, but thinking about it hurt my head. And so I'm red-pilling this one, though. It's not killing the franchise for me. It's been a rapid descent. As fast as the hammer was traveling through the Earth's core to get to Zion is as fast as this entire franchise is plummeting. But still, I stand by my Green Arrow for 2 because it has some really exciting things. I recommend you see it, even though I still wish they hadn't made it. Does that make sense?
Well, it does coming from you. Yes, it does.
But this one, no, I can't recommend it. It hurts my head to think about. It's unsatisfying. And I understand why I've hated these two movies combined ever since seeing them in theaters is because it was so unsatisfying to me in 2003. Now, I get that this is the ending they were building towards, but they just don't tell it in a way that is entertaining, logical, or satisfying. So, no, I'm gonna not recommend The Matrix Revolutions. But this may not be the end.
Oh?
We were past the point of no return on doing a Matrix retrospective right now. When the news came out, apparently, I guess they're not planning Jupiter Ascending to do very well, as the Wachowskis are already planning their comeback trilogy, returning to the Matrix.
Ruh-roh, that does not speak well to this summer's effort, does it?
No, but after Cloud Atlas, I mean, it's...
I only made it through 30 minutes of that film.
And I liked it a lot more than this, but okay.
But yeah, there are rumors. Nothing is confirmed. The Wachowskis are notoriously press shy. We may hear more as we get closer to Jupiter Ascending. But they're talking about jacking back into the Matrix, not once, not twice, but 3 more times.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes, he'll be appearing in it.
No doubt about it.
Some version of him, at least.
Prequel, right? This would be the moments that Lawrence Fishburne first got saved and Trinity first popped out of the tomb.
I don't think they could do it without Neo. I think it's a sequel and the return of Neo. It's teased at the end of this one. Neo may return.
No. Ugh.
I think this is the return of Neo and a new enemy or something.
I want a prequel. I maybe even go back further. Show us some different Neos. Show us the third Neo, or say if you could tell a satisfying story. Again, I just want to be jacked in the Matrix. I like that world. Let's stay out of Zion. Let's stay out of the Machine City. I'd be up for that.
My problem is, truly, I would be fine with going back to the Matrix if they could recapture that sense of fun of the first one. These sequels take themselves so seriously, and I do feel like that self-seriousness has characterized all the Wachowski movies ever since then. It's like they think their shit does not stink. They think that everything they do is high art. This was never meant to be that.
You haven't seen Speed Racer where Chim Chim rides a Segway then.
I haven't. I have not seen Speed Racer, and I promise to watch it and review it on the Facebook page before we get to Jupiter Ascending. But I just feel like, damn it, Bound and Matrix were fun movies, and everything else has been this attempt to be Kubrick. I feel like they want to make 2001 ever since then, and leave it alone. I just feel like that's not their forte. It should be enough to make an entertaining, intelligent popcorn film. And if they can do that, I'll plug back into the Matrix. But if they want to explore any more of these high-minded myth deconstructions, hell to the no.
Yeah, I agree. I am the one who framed it, although I did read it also, other people saying it, as a career resurrection, you know, a return to the well. Bryan Singer had to go back to X-Men. You know, every so often you go down too many rabbit holes and then you need to find a commercially viable film.
Yes.
And so returning to The Matrix feels like that for the Wachowskis. We don't know what's going to happen with Jupiter Ascending.
I hope it's not a Jack the Giant Slayer, if you're using Bryan Singer as your metaphor.
I know all three of us are forced to see this in theaters. I'm hoping it's good. But I do hope that if they return to it, they return to the spirit of the original and stop this myth building. Unfortunately, my complete intuition is it would go the exact opposite way, and this thing will become even more dense and eventually just collapse upon itself.
Stop. Yeah, no, that I can't bear the thought.
But, I mean, do you disagree with that?
No, I don't disagree, but I feel like, take some notes. I mean, that's what I'm hoping, is that hopefully they read a chat room. Maybe they've donated. Maybe they're hearing their shows. Take some notes.
Hey, if anyone has their email, I'll give it to them for free.
I really just feel like you owe the fans this. You're not doing this because you need to build more lore. You're doing this because, yeah, you want to make some money, regain your cred, and give the fans something that they want. Keep an audience in mind. That's what all I'm really asking. I just feel like these Matrix sequels was like the equivalent to someone sealing themselves up into a cave and talking themselves up to a point where even they didn't know what the hell they were saying. And I just feel like, let the air in, let the light in, and maybe let some other voices write stories for you, and it could work. But I'm not enthused. I gotta say, I really hope that Jupiter Ascending can be that film. To me, it looks like The Matrix. I look at those previews, and I'm like, Mila Kunis is like, she's like Trinity and Neo. She's like Trio. To me, it looks like they've already gone down that well and said, we're trying to reboot The Matrix, but using different characters and archetypes, and a lot of crazy wigs, apparently. Facial hair I've never seen.
Well, they had noses in Cloud Atlas, so I guess they're going with wigs now.
Yeah.
Well, that will be the final podcast in our silver donation series. So once again, listeners, thank you. Now, there are several weeks until that movie comes out. So if you were a gold donor, then we're going to go ape and go ahead and review all of the Planet of the Apes theatrical films.
That's right. We've got two more months of podcast. If you're silver level, we will get back to you, but obviously we can't review the movie until it's out in theaters here in America. In the meantime, hopefully you can join us. It is a bump in pay, and I recognize not everyone has it to give, but I do think it's going to be 8 great shows and really a lot more thought-provoking science fiction. I like the fact that we're dealing with sci-fi that's egg-headed, that's about ideas. We're going to talk about more than fight scenes here, and I think that, yeah, they should be really interesting to watch a series evolve from 1968 and hippies to modern-day Hollywood sci-fi sensibilities. I think we're going to see a lot of variants, even though it's all within this ape universe.
Though we get back to James Franco, which, you know, pot-smoking hippie.
Is he a hippie? I'm not sure they'll claim him, but he is definitely a weirdo.
Just smokes a lot of pot.
Yeah, he's a weirdo. I'll give you that. And I got a lot of thoughts on James Franco.
Well, as we exit the Matrix and enter the real world, it's also good time to let our listeners know what we have coming up this summer outside of our donation series. We've, of course, got Jupiter Ascending later this summer and Planet of the Apes, but on the regular feed, we're going to take a bit of a break from King this summer and go into deep space with a couple of space odysseys, 2001 and 2010.
So excited. Any excuse you can give me to see a good movie, I'm going to take it. And I think that that's my one reprieve before we go back to King and do two movies that I remember one of them, Maximum Overdrive. And yes, they actually remade it, called Trucks.
King's gonna scare the hell out of you.
He does. He really does, but not the way he thinks it is. And I guess that's all building up to our other semi-sentient movie of the summer, Transformers 4. I don't even know what it's called.
Age of Extinction.
I thought it was Transformers.
I think they dropped that.
Oh, they dropped Transformers? Or they dropped Age of Extinction.
No, it's no longer has the 4 in the actual title.
Ah. Yeah, after Trucks, we're going to take a break from King for a while. We've got Transformers, and then we are going to end the summer with Turtle Power.
Cowabunga, dude.
Oh my God. Do I not know what I'm in for with this? I babysat once and I saw a couple of these, but all right, sure. Let's catch up with everything from the 80s that I missed. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
We'll let the donors know. Stuart did everything he could to not be in that series.
You do not even know. I was running down the street going, "You want to be on a podcast? You like turtles?"
But you're choking down some pizza, babe.
Oh, boy. I am. I am choking all year. I feel like I am choking. But I do have Kubrick, so that makes me happy. And then, of course, we got to get through the longest part of the night shift. It's only halfway done, guys. We've got to get through 9 stalks of corn. And I'm going to bring the butter.
Yeah, Children of the Corn goes during harvest season, August through October. So all that coming at nowplayingpodcast.com, all able to be done thanks to you, the donor, who support our show. So thank you so much. All the theatrical stuff we're doing this year, Captain America 2, Amazing Spider-Man 2, X-Men Days of Future Past, Transformers, Guardians of the Galaxy, Mutant Ninja Turtles, all of those big movies that we've done week of release, and then all of the King we're doing, it's all made possible. The bandwidth, the servers, the tickets, all thanks to you. So thank you so much for your support. So thank you once again, listeners. We hope you've enjoyed jacking into the Matrix with us. We will be back in July with the review of Jupiter Ascending. And until then, Tank, one last time, I need an exit.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Once again, thank you for your support of Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this episode in the Now Playing The Matrix retrospective series.
What was said was for you, and for you alone.
Your support helps keep Now Playing on the air.
You're my savior, man. My own personal Jesus Christ.
The Matrix films are the property of Warner Brothers Pictures, and no infringement is intended. Now Playing Podcast is not affiliated with the makers or distributors of these films.
You give me that jurisdiction crap, you can cram it up your ass.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Not everyone believes what you believe.
My beliefs do not require them to.
Now Playing's The Matrix retrospective series is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2014. All rights reserved. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Goodbye, Mr. Anderson.
Well, it turns out he's in a program that appears like a subway station used by the Merovingian to smuggle rogue programs.
Merovingian.
Yeah, it's a Gingy. Yeah, think Gingy. Of that. Yeah.
But they created a love child machine named Sati. Sadie.
Sati.
Sati.
Yeah. Ah. But the- I'll just give you diction suggestions throughout this. That once he did get out of the coma and went to see the Oracle, we'd have all of this bizarre crap about how it's not Gloria Stewart anymore. Or not Gloria. What's her name? How it's not... Oh, I don't have her name anymore. How it's not the woman that played her before. Like I said, every scene in this film up until the dyke fight...
I missed that.
Yeah, well, the cut deleted scene, right? Jada Pinkett?
That was in the video game, yeah.
The Bound crossover?
Yes. Yeah. You would have liked it. Jennifer Tilly came back.
Oh, damn it. I need that extra DVD now. But that said, I'm kind of, again, coming down between the two of you where there are parts of... Excuse me.
Yes, there are. There's a lot of those, actually, in this one. And then don't forget the farts.